amazed to see that it's almost twice as big as it used to be. So now time has gone on, and now you have even a time room. So I'm pleased to be here. And I'm going to tell you about our recent work done together with my Polish friends, Wojciech Roga from Krakow, now from Salerno, Italy, Zbigniew Puchała from Gliwice, and Łukasz Rudnicki from Warsaw. But let me thank you again for the invitation, especially Joseph, because somehow, because of him, I'm here. And I'm going to tell you about quantum operations and entropic uncertainty relations. So I will make a short introduction to the subject. You know, many of you work with quantum information. And of course, if we talk about information, entropy is important. But here I'll start with even more basic problem concerning those of you who know foundations. All of you know quantum mechanics. And you know that Heisenberg uncertainty relation is of key importance. You know perhaps the a bit later formulation by Robertson, which is valid for arbitrary two operators A and B. So as you know, of course, this is product of two variances, which here in any state psi is bounded from below by the expectation value of the commutator. And this, on one hand, if you plug in value of this commutator, you get this relation. So h bar is said to be equal to 1, of course, you know. But also, this is important because if those two observables almost commute, then this commutator will be small. And eventually, if they do commute, then the right-hand side is 0. So somehow, this formulation gives us a recipe what happens if you change the observables. And now, maybe you know about another possibility to formulate such uncertainty relation. And if you use so-called Boltzmann-Gibbs or continuous entropies, so now you have wave function in the space representation. It's a continuous function. You just define such a continuous Boltzmann-Gibbs entropy. Another one in for the same function in the momentum representation. And then the uncertainty relation concerning entropy now concerns the sum, because here you have a logarithm. So you don't have a product as in Heisenberg, but now a sum of two entropies. And the sum of those two entropies is not so small. It is bounded by something. The something here, nice number log of e pi. It somehow depends on normalization, but it's still non-zero number. And then this formulation is partially due to Bechner, but partially I'm proud to mention a Polish paper by Białynicki, Brula, and Michielski from 75, quite a known paper. And then to my surprise, it occurs that Professor Białynicki, Brula, who is still active, just recently, for look, 30 years later, wrote another paper in which he generalized some of his earlier statements also for Reni entropies we are not going to use here. It is just a generalized version of entropies where Q is arbitrary parameter. As you know, if Q goes to unity, then we get back the standard entropy and standard formulation. Now, another question arises. What happens with those relations if we now live in finite dimensional Hilbert space before we had infinite dimensional Hilbert space? And this is the question which was first tackled by Deutsch and then Massen-Uffing. And the results are very nice. Let's take any state we can expand in one basis. So we have n expansion coefficients. Alpha forms one basis. Beta forms another basis. For any expansion, you can define entropies. So ai squared absolute values, all of them sum to unity, the standard expansion. So you can define entropy on one expansion. There is entropy of another expansion. The labels A and B can be associated to operators such that those states are eigenbases. And now it occurs that the sum of those two entropies cannot be too small. This is bounded somehow. And first Deutsch found a first bound. And here the key number in this bound is this blue C. And C is nothing else as a maximal absolute value of the transition matrix. Of course, this matrix is a unitary matrix. You have two bases, alpha and beta. So you can easily go from one to another. So U is a unitary matrix. And now this is a number which just tells us how large is the absolute value of the largest element. So this is the first bound, and this even stronger bound, result, famous result by Massen and Uffing. Now it is something like 20 years old, even more. So now look, if it happens that this U is, let's say, identity matrix, then the maximal value will be 1. So log of 1 is 0. So this is bound is trivial. It's not bound at all. However, if U is not, does not contain elements of size 1, then this bound is non-trivial. By the way, it might be good to know that this Massen-Uffing relation, quite known, can also be extended for those generalized Rényi-like entropies. So I will give another concrete example. If we take famous Fourier matrix, so here it is, all absolute values are the same. It is just 1 over square root of n. So the maximal of this unitary matrix is, of course, 1 over square root of n. So then, if we compute minus 2 log of c, we get a very nice bound that sum of two entropies, so entropy of the state in one basis plus the entropy of the same state in the Fourier rotated basis, is larger or equal than log of n. So this is even more similar to the standard Heisenberg relation. Of course, it depends on the size of the Hilbert space. Obviously, if one state is a pure state in a given basis, then first entropy is 0. However, its Fourier coefficients have the same modulus, and then the second entropy will be equal to log of n, so the bound can be saturated. By the way, this is true not only for the Fourier matrix, but also for any other matrix, unitary matrix, such that it has same absolute values of elements. And those matrices, they can be considered as a kind of generalization of the standard Hadamard matrices. You know, the standard Hadamard matrix, like H2, is 1, 1, 1, minus 1. In quantum information, we add also prefactor to make it unitary. So it consists of all elements which are plus or minus. So this definition is a bit more general because you allow them to be complex. You only assume that the absolute values of those are equal. And they, of course, by construction, they have the same property that if you rotate by such a generalized Hadamard matrix a given state, you will get a state which is uniformly distributed. And the bound will also be saturated. By the way, just to let you know, it's an interesting story that those complex Hadamard matrices, they of course exist for any n, like Fourier matrices. But it occurs that for n equal, let's say 1 is trivial, but 2, 3, 4, 5, all of them are known. They are used for many different purposes in quantum information, for instance, to generate maximally entangled bases or teleportation scheme. There's a nice paper by Werner. And here, it's interesting that already for n equals 6, we still do not know all of them. So it was our side project. We wrote a paper just to collect all known cases of complex Hadamard matrices. If you are interested, there is a catalog on our webpage. And this problem to classify all those Hadamard matrices is still open even for n equals 6. And this is related to the famous MUP problem, which is also open for n equals 6. But we are not going to discuss this topic now. We are just going to go back to the entropic uncertainty relation for quantum operations. So what I'm going to discuss? I'm going to discuss a quantum operation phi, which is going to act on an n-dimensional state. And I wish to compare information loss introduced by this quantum operation. So technically, it's a completely positive trace-preserving CPTP linear map. With the information the receiver knows about the outgoing state before the measurement. You can ask whether he knows something about the state. But let's assume there is a completely depolarizing channel, which takes all the Bloch ball into one point. So then, of course, he knows everything, because independently of what the initial state is, the output state will be exactly one given point maximally mixed state. So somehow, you see that the amount of information receiver knows depends on the quantum operation. So we wish to somehow compare those two things, yes?
Operation, or is there some kind of operation and then a measurement?
No, no, okay. Quantum operation, I will go into details, is described by a measurement operators. So for me, this is the same. So one operation is already discussed by Krauss operators or measurement operators. This is only, first, we discuss only discrete case. We act once with a given quantum operation. Okay, okay. So just this is to catch your attention. I will explain what I mean in a second. Just now, I will mention about related research, and of course, there are many different papers recently written on similar subjects. In general, one has kind of uncertainty relations for conditional entropies of a state subjected to a map represented by a concrete set of measurement operators. There's a quite huge list of interesting papers. Some of them are written in the group of Zurich, Rennes, Renner, and Christiandl. Some of them are written in Pittsburgh. One is nice from Russia, Rastegin, and so on. There are many of those. So my point is that our research is somehow related, but of course, as you will see, it's not exactly the same. But if you know some of those papers or results, they are somehow related. So now, Joseph, I promise to explain what I mean by this, and how I wish to characterize entropies. Okay, so a short introduction to the subject, quantum map. So we take a space of states. For the case of one qubit, is just a Bloch sphere, or in fact, Bloch ball. I consider also mixed states. And my linear map maps ball into ball. So capital great phi is just a map which maps the set of mixed states. Here, M2 is just a set of mixed states into M2. Well, you know the standard definition, perhaps. The map is positive if an image of any positive matrix is positive. It's completely positive if also extended map by identity is positive for any size of extension. And any map phi can be written in the so-called Krauss form. So it is a sum over AI row, AI dagger, where those Krauss operators satisfy such an identity resolution, which implies the trace preserving property. And of course, this representation is not unique. So I assume now that a phi is given. I will discuss different maps. I assume phi is given, and then we can now choose different Krauss representation of a given map. Well, some technical details, we do not need to go too much into the details, but a bit still. So I take my map, which acts on row and produces row prime. I can treat for a while this density matrix as a vector and write this map as a huge matrix of size n square, where I sum here over both indices n nu. And then this sometimes in quantum optics is called super operator because it acts on operators. This is nothing to do with supersymmetry. So it is just a huge operator of size n square. And then it's easy to show that if we know for a given Krauss expansion, if we know those Krauss operators, then this phi can be written in the following way. Sum over AI tensor AI bar. So indeed, it is now, in a sense, like a composite state. And indeed, it can be represented or understood as a composite state. And there is a famous theorem of Choi and of Yamaokoski, which basically says that any map phi can be represented one-to-one by a state of an extended system, which is obtained by taking a maximally entangled state, psi plus, which lives in n times n space, and acting on one part of the state with phi. This is just normalization constant. So this D is called now a Choi matrix. He showed in 75 that a map phi is completely positive if and only if this matrix, now called Choi matrix, is positive. And we'll use this Choi matrix. It's a positive matrix. We can, for instance, diagonalize it. We can also compute its spectrum and its entropy. So simplest, this is one of the possibilities, way to describe somehow a quantum operation is to look into the corresponding Choi state and, for instance, study the von Neumann entropy of the state. Let me mention then that it is not dependent on the particular choice of the operators, Krauss operators, because it's related to the eigen decomposition of D. So I will basically use two objects. First, which is called entropy of a map. It's written like this, S map of phi. It's just defined as the for Neumann entropy of the corresponding Yamoukovsky choice state d phi. This is just normalization that the trace is equal to unity. So standard von Neumann formula for this very state. As you see, of course, it characterizes somehow the operation. Let's check the limiting cases. If the operation is unitary, it's just a unitary rotation, then it occurs, of course, the state choice state is pure, so its entropy will be zero. So then the map entropy will be zero. In the another extreme case, if we have just this completely depolarizing channel, so it sends any initial state into maximally mixed state, then this Choi matrix is just identity matrix of size n square. So then its entropy is log of n square, so 2 log n. They are just the two extreme cases. And now we'll somehow use a different notion. And then, as usual, if you think something is new, you better ask your student to look into literature. If he's good enough, he will find something. In this case, my colleague Zbyszek found that there's a book by, I'm not sure whether it's Jumari or Jumari from 2000, where the following object is defined. It's a very simple object. Basically, let's take any matrix. It needs not to be related to quantum mechanics. And it can be non-Hermitian. Well, so then you might have problems with eigenvalues which might not be real. But of course, you can define singular values. So what are singular values? If you have any matrix, I know X, you can take X, X dagger. This is already a Hermitian matrix. And you can, for instance, take square root of it. So, or you can take square root of eigenvalues of a positive matrix. And this is nothing else, just singular values of a given matrix X. So in this paper or book, there is an idea that for any matrix, you can take singular values of this matrix. Then you can, you know, they usually do not sum to unity. Why they should they? But you can obviously rescale them. So now sigma j denotes singular values of phi, and mi j are just rescaled singular values, such that they sum to unity. So now it can be used, such a vector, to compute standard Shannon entropy. And now I will try to argue that this entropy for this operator, now phi is treated as a matrix of size n squared times n squared, it's just the super operator, that it will carry some important information for us. So, yes? Yes. No, no. In general, you will see. You will see. They need not to. Okay. I will give you immediately some examples and try to explain why we believe in our case this definition is reasonable and it characterizes something. So basically, I will try to discuss two different. For any phi, I will take one entropy, try to explain what it means. Another entropy, try to understand what it means, and possibly look for the bounds for them. If there are any. Yes. So,
to find the entropy of a map in terms of the Jabotinsky state.
Yes.
Now, but is there also some operational meaning to the entropy of the map in terms of how much, say, the worst case scenario?
Yes. This is. Yes. Why? Because the idea is the following, to answer it briefly, it is bound for the information you can get, provided you are allowed to choose different Krauss operators, different measurement operators for a given map. Because then it corresponds to diagonal case. This entropy corresponds to choosing all Krauss operators orthogonal.
Okay.
It is. Okay, so now just to show you something, let's say n equal 2, the
block ball. This is a sketch of block ball, and let's assume there is a map phi which acts in the following way. It shrinks the ball. Let's assume it's, the map is bistochastic, which means that the center, ball center, does not move. So then this ellipsoid is characterized by three semi-axes, eta 1, eta 2, eta 3. And now my claim is, okay, very simple, that in fact, in this case, the singular values of this super operator are just written here. Why it is so? Okay, I think I forgot to put it down on my transparency, but I do it then right away. Instead of writing rho prime is phi acting on rho, I can write the rho in terms of so-called Bloch vector, so maximally mixed state, 1 over 2 plus sigma vector times tau vector, where this is a vector of free Pauli matrices, and this is the famous Bloch vector. In the case of n equal 2, it's just a free vector. And now my map can be now mapped, written as, in a, well, what shall I put? Okay, let's say capital T phi of on tau. So now I only represent this map by studying what happens to the vector tau. So tau is kind of a vector. And now in this very case, you see that this now the matrix T phi has the following structure. Eta 1, eta 2, eta 3. So it is a diagonal matrix. What it does, it does not change. So you have zeros everywhere. And it has such a form because it here the one corresponds to normalization. And now it means that the first axis is squeezed by a factor of eta 1, second by eta 2, third by eta 3. So this is exactly a representation in the Bloch vector basis. And now, since this is already diagonal, first of all, you see that eigenvalues are equal to singular values. This is one point. Second, of course, they are not normalized. Because in the case of maximally depolarizing channel, let's call it T star, will be, of course, T, and it will be 0, 0, because then it means that all it does go to, I did something wrong. So it may happen that those etas also vanish. But if you now risk, this is the reason why should we rescale. But even not thinking about rescaling, you see something, that those singular values, at least in this case, they have a very simple interpretation. They tell us how big is this ellipsoid in different axes. So the number of non-zero coefficients eta tells us somehow what is the dimensionality of the space I can look for the outcome of my measurement. I will give you some more examples soon. Now let me just demonstrate a very simple, trivial in a sense example. So you know how a bit looks like, so 2 points. So here's 1.0 red and black is 1. But if you consider probabilistic states, this entire interval. So we discussed this an hour ago. And now what means a quantization? Well, one possible way, Cosmin is not here, is to embed my state of space of states in a larger space. Here, for 1 qubit, I can do it here online. This is not difficult. I hope I can do it. Sorry. Additional effects, yes. Anyway, now we produce a qubit. This is simple. We have a Bloch sphere of pure states. And of course, Bloch ball inside. So now those two states of bit, they are still there. But you have many other states you can obtain by just superposition of two states. Now, let's consider a first case if we have an identity or any unitary operation. Unitary operation is simple. You just make a rotation in free space of this Bloch sphere of a balloon. So now look how this operator looks like. Okay, if we do not do nothing, operator, just identity. So singular values, okay, all of them are ones. Okay, like this. So we wish to normalize them. Our vector mu
contains four elements, 1, 4, 1, 4, 1, 4, 1, 4. So of course, this entropy is log of 4, so 2 log 2. By the way, it's maximal. Why? Because we do not know anything about the outcome state, if there's identity. Let's look now at the Choi matrix. By the way, the Choi matrix can be written as this matrix reshuffled. You basically go and exchange this element with this and this with this. So those two ones go here. So this is just the Choi matrix corresponding to identity. Okay, it's also trivial because this is here you put identity. And this is just maximally entangled state. Nice Bell state in this basis. So now look, we can diagonalize this nice Hermitian matrix. And you immediately see that the eigenvalues are 2, 0, 0, 0. After normalization, here 1 over n, we get pure state. So the map entropy is 0. So this is the first observation. The map entropy is 0 because there was no interaction. However, then the receiver entropy is maximal. So this is the first case. Now let's take another one. So here, look what happens. Oh, this is a decoherence somehow. So I obtained now back a classical state. So classical state is again on my line. So classical state is obtained by decoherence. So my super operator acts in the following way. It produces from any density matrix a diagonal. So here it means that I have two ones and all others are zero. So again, now singular values are, of course, those diagonals. So 1, 1. If we normalize them, they are two of them are equal to 1 half. So receiver entropy is log of 2. So half of the entropy which used to be before. Choi matrix, now it is exactly has the same structure because here in this case, reshuffling does not change anything. And again, the entropy is log of 2. So now we saw that in the immediate case, this decoherence, or sometimes called coarse graining channel, which puts any density matrix into a diagonal form, is described by two entropies which are equal. Eventually, the last case I already discussed a little bit, it is if we act with a maximally depolarizing channel, which takes entire ball. Takes entire ball and puts it to a single point, like this. So then the super operator, well, looks like this. And its entropy is 0. Why? Choi matrix now is identity, and its entropy is maximum. So looking at those three cases, they are obtained here for n equal 2. But you can easily generalize them for any dimension. You somehow see a simple thing. If one entropy is big, another is small. And somehow some of those entropies, well, perhaps the sum of those entropies cannot be too small. So this was a starting observation for our project. And we are thinking, well, perhaps it's kind of related, this problem with the entropic uncertainty relation you saw before, in which sum of two entropies, of course, there was very different entropies, cannot be too small. So here it is. This is a picture, or in a sense, a projection of the space of all 1-qubit channels for the plane spanned by this map entropy, S of phi, and our receiver entropy. So this is concerns eigenvalues of the Hermitian Choi matrix, and this considers rescaled eigenvalues of the superoperator. Both entropies change from 0 to 2 log 2. Now, yellow shape corresponds to bistochastic matrices, bistochastic operations. They are those operations which preserve the center. And again, you see here distinguished cases. So for instance, this picture shows that this point corresponds to maximally depolarizing channel, which puts everything into the center. This point, log 2, log 2, corresponds to the coarse graining, which puts entire ball into a line. And this is identity or unitary operation, which does not do nothing. So this is for bistochastic channels. And for stochastic, this shape is a bit larger. The set is larger. For instance, this is another, let's say, completely contractive map, like In quantum optics, we will call it a spontaneous emission, because it puts all states into the ground state. So it shrinks everything to a point which is not in the center, but here. And it corresponds to the case that one entropy is 0 second is log of two. So this was just an observation. We can basically prove that there are the limiting lines. Only for n equal to this is simple. And this allowed us somehow to speculate. Well, for the yellow line, you immediately see that such a bound for the sum could be like this. And perhaps for in the general case, something like this. Now we wish to prove and understand what happens and why a sum of two entropies cannot be too large. So here it is, the main theorem, OK, in two versions. So we consider now the more general case of n-dimensional state. And we claim and prove later on that the following statement is true for any stochastic map. So stochastic, so again, quantum operation, so completely positive trace specific map. Acting on n-dimensional state, the following inequality holds. Map entropy plus the receiver entropy is not smaller than log of n. Moreover, if you restrict the set of operations to those b-stochastic maps, they are trace-preserving and unital because they preserve identity, then, of course, this is also true, but you can obtain a stronger statement, the sum of the same entropies for bistochastic maps is larger than 2 log n, which basically corresponds to moving this bound upwards. Well, and now, okay, so this is main statement. Now, a couple of technical tools used to prove the statement. We will, in fact, use the Rényi entropy, which was already defined. This is the quantum version. So you have moment, basically trace rho to some power, and take 1 over 1 over q in such a way that in the limit q going to unity, we recover back standard von Neumann entropy. Here it is. And then it is known that as well quantum as classical version of the Rényi entropy is decreases as a function of the parameter q. This is important because, as you know, perhaps for q equal 2, it's easier to do some computations. And if we get some bounds for q equal 2, we can say something about q equal 1. So now another version of this theorem, which is perhaps a bit more general, but not so easy to understand. But the theorem is more now technical because now we have the same assumptions, and we use now not standard entropy, but generalized entropy as q for any q from 0 to 2. And another point is here at the right-hand side, log of what? Sigma 1 is this maximal singular value of phi. But you can also define it as a maximum over purity of the image with respect to the purity of the initial state. So this is a more physical interpretation of this number. And now, if we prove this, then somehow we can obtain as a particular cases for bistochastic and stochastic maps our statement as before. And for bistochastic maps, this statement is true for any q from 0 to 2, because the one thing we have to show is that this greater singular value cannot be larger than 1. So then, sorry, in fact, it is equal to 1. So then log of this 0 and this correction vanishes. How to show it? This is simple. If this map phi is bistochastic, then phi dagger is also a quantum channel. So multiplying two channels, phi and phi dagger, is also a channel. And now this is a positive matrix, and its greatest eigenvalue is equal to 1 due to analog of the Frobenius-Perron theorem. So it's just a singular value of this matrix phi. So this is just a, it proves the first statement. So the correction term log of this sigma 1 vanishes. And you see here the assumption that the channel is bistochastic is important. And of course, somehow, degree of bistochasticity, so what it means? It means what is the entropy of the image of the maximally mixed state. it will play a role in our estimations. This is the even more general version of the statement for any maps formulated for any Q entropies. And to show it, okay, one has to get a bound for this largest eigenvalue defined before. So here it is exactly shown and plotted on our picture obtained for n equal 2. So I recall this picture you already have seen. There are two axes, map entropy and receiver entropy. The only difference is I showed before a bit different shape, because now I show S2. Before the picture was for Neumann entropy S1, but the structure of the picture is the same. The lines here are a bit different. And here are two bounds. One is for general, for all stochastic maps, and this is more precise bound for bistochastic maps. And our strategy was to prove the statement for Q equal 2, then to find this correction for bistochasticity and show that it can be improved for bistochastic maps, and then to infer similar result for Q equal 1 for the von Neumann entropies. Well, I'm not sure I have enough time to go too deep into details. So you need to make an estimation for those largest singular value, which is written in this way. This is a nice statement because, okay, square of the singular values is somehow, as you see, the ratio of the final purity. This is purity, tracer square. So this is initial purity, this is final purity. So it has some better physical interpretation. And then one has to show that this is bounded by, it depends on the size, dimensionality of the Hilbert space, and then it's bounded by square root of n. And then, well, using inequalities concerning singular values, so here we basically bound all of them by the largest, and using monotonicity of the Rényi entropy, if we have parameter q increasing, then the entropy generally decreases. So we obtained a statement for Q equal 2, and we can infer a similar statement for Q equal 1. Okay, and this is this result concerning the estimation of the largest singular value of our superoperator phi, which is just equal to square root of n, and 2 log of this number gives me log of n, and just this implies the bound. So this is just a sketch of the proof. Well, now we will also distinguish interval maps. So, okay, they are in a sense generalization of those maps I discussed before, like coarse graining, which takes any state into a line. Decoherence is we squeeze entire ball into a line, and here interval maps, it is that it shifts entire ball into any combination of two states. They can be orthogonal, need not to be orthogonal. And here we can show that for this special class of interval maps, there is another link that the receiver entropy is not larger than log n, and the map entropy is larger, not smaller than log of n. And then this somehow explains that those interval maps can be put into this part of the picture. So yellow region corresponds to bistochastic maps, and this white to those interval maps. So now it's a bit strange, because of course there exist maps which are neither bistochastic nor interval. However, in this plot, if we use those two axes, map entropy and receiver entropy, entire set of states can be divided into two classes, and those two sets explore entire allowed set. And then Well, there was a question, what is an interpretation of this map entropy? So Joseph, it's just this entropy of the corresponding Yamiokoski choice state, or it is an entropy of the measurement under the assumption that the map is fixed and you are allowed to optimize over all possible decompositions, all possible Krauss operators. So it has, in a sense, operational meaning. And what is another somehow side result, we got a nice bound for this quantity. This is our map entropy. And here is log of n. And here, it is just, in a sense, a degree of non-bistochasticity. Why? Here we have identity matrix, we scaled. And this is image of it. So if I have a bistochastic map, then it means that center goes into the center. So this is exactly 1 over n. And this point here is our map phi. So this is phi acting on this maximally mixed state. So for bistochastic matrices, bistochastic operations, center is mapped into the center. So its entropy is maximal. So now you see that this is entropy of the image of the maximally mixed state. And then this number tells us to what extent the map is bistochastic. So now we see that, for instance, if we consider a map which takes all states, entire ball, into a single point, let's say this one here, it's not maximally depolarizing channel, but this, for instance, like this spontaneous emission, that it could be a ground state, then its entropy is 0. So then this is 0, this is 0, and now we have a very nice bound that the map entropy is between log n to log n, so it's just equal to log n. So now you see that this bound tells us somehow about those properties of the map entropy as a function, as an ingredient, is just the entropy of the image of the maximally mixed state. Okay, and here, to prove this inequality, we can use the famous subadditivity of entropies and also the, let's say, dual Araki-Lieb triangle inequality to get both bounds. So, okay, there are relatively well-known tools in the theory of quantum information. And then in the case of Rényi entropies, it requires so-called weak subadditivity of Rényi entropies. So what's plotted here, again, this is the map entropy, which goes from 0 to 2 log 2 for qubits, in general to 2 log n. And this is the entropy of the image of maximally mixed state. So for instance, this is just the case plotted here, so the spontaneous emission, where the entropy of the state is 0, so then the map entropy is equal to log of n. And here the density of points shows, okay, we wish to check what happens if you take the average or generic map and we consider an ensemble of random maps with a, let's say, flat, so natural distribution on the space, entire space of maps, and somehow the degree of black shows what cases are likely. So in the case that there are bounds, and those maps are very unlikely and very typical maps are somehow in this region. So if you take some kind of a generic map, by the way, how you can produce a generic operation? It's very simple. You take your system, you take an auxiliary ancilla of the same size, and oh, let me write it somewhere, and you use the following formula. Rho goes into phi of rho equal trace over environment. Here is our state rho coupled to ancilla state u dagger, where u dagger lives in u of, say, size n square. And here is the partial trace over environment. And the only assumption is that nu belongs to hn of the same size. One parameter is size of ancilla. And second is random u, and of course you take u from this group with respect to the Haar measure. So this is a simple recipe how to produce a random maps, and you can prove that if the size of the ancilla here n is equal to the size of the state, then this recipe produces random maps which cover entire set of maps. It's also a convex set with a Lebesgue uniform density. I think I should slowly go to end to leave some time for questions. Yes? No, it is a recipe, and the definition is just to prove that it's kind of Lebesgue measure. So you have to prove something. It's not clear from the very beginning that if you produce here Haar measure on U, that let's consider this is a kind of space of maps, which is a complicated convex body. Dimensionality of it is like n4 minus n2. It's a convex set. So it's not so clear to see that if you start with this recipe and the Haar measure here, you will land with a uniform distribution there, yes? But it is so. OK, it is a convex set you can embed in R to this power. Like, for instance, this is a triangle, or sorry, a rectangle embedded in R2. So you have a uniform Lebesgue measure on the real space. Yes? OK, OK. I see the point, but but on the other hand, it is nice that this simple assumption, which is in a sense motivated, the only parameter here is size of the Hilbert space of the ancilla, happens to produce this flat measure if and only if the size of the ancilla is equal. Oh, I'm sorry, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe it should be n square. Okay, anyway, it's not arbitrary, but the size is well prescribed. Thanks for the question. So then I will slowly arrive at the conclusions. First of all, entropy is a key tool used not only in quantum information theory, but also in the information theory. And then I think you can try somehow to combine our study on quantum operations in general with entropy uncertainty relations. They are formulated for very, very many different setups. And now there is an active field of research which also is related to the properties of generalization of strong subadditivity theorems in quantum information. And now we suggest here to use the same analogy and to define two entropies which describe properties of a map. One is the map entropy, so just the entropy of the corresponding Yamukovsky state. And then it measures basically decoherence introduced by the map to the system. If it is zero, it corresponds to unitary rotation. There's no interaction with the environment. If it's maximal, it's a maximal depolarization. It is a maximally depolarizing channel, so there is an extremal interaction with the environment, on one hand. On the other, we take this definition of Joumarie and use the entropy of singular values. Like singular values, we call it receiver entropy because, as I told you, with this case of ellipsoid, so here it was, okay, it was an ellipsoid with three axes, like eta 1, eta 2, and somewhere here eta 3. Those three axes, you don't see it here well, they are just form singular values, and now rescaled singular values, sorry, enter this entropy. I overdid it, perhaps. Sorry, but I hope I can handle with it. Let's see what Windows says. Oop. Okay, but by the way, this is one reason I always prefer to use power supply, because if I don't, it happens too often. And now, okay. So it occurs that one can prove that some of those two entropies is bounded from below, which basically means from physical perspective, it means the following. If we want to know something about the outcome state, we have to perturb the system. The more we perturb the system, the more we can somehow get information about the outcome state, not knowing the income state. And then this bound for a sum of two entropies holds, in fact, not only for the Reni entropy, for Neumann entropy, but also for the family of Reni entropies, which are used in the proof. But in general, the following bound holds. On the right-hand side, you have log of n, where n is dimensionality of the system, while for bistochastic map, this bound is even sharper. And then, as a side result, we obtain upper and lower bounds of the entropy of the map, which characterize the decoherence introduced into the system in terms of the entropy of the image of the maximally mixed state. And here, this result is, I believe, a bit interesting and important because it is independent on the Krauss operators, in a sense, on the way how you represent and really realize a given map, because it holds for any Krauss, possible Krauss representation. So this is it. I finish on time, I hope. Thank you very much. Yes, yes.
But I mean,
look, we fixed phi.
No, I mean, that's, I mean, I find that, I mean, that's what I would expect that you would.
Okay. But no, this is just to emphasize the difference because in those recent papers quoted here, they basically just study a complementary problem if they are. They assume that the map is already represented by a given set of operators. So in those papers, those operators are involved and play any role.
Well, that's why.
So in a sense, our from this perspective is a kind of optimization of all possible decompositions.
I see.
The difference.
I see.
Any more questions? Let's thank Carol again.